Security excellence through education. Corporate Security University. Hey, everybody. It is great to see you again. My name is Carlos Francisco.
And I'm Scott Walker.
This is Corporate Security University.
Security excellence through education. It's been a while, Carlos.
It's been a while, Scotty, but I'm excited to be here, man, as we talk about a topic that is definitely near and dear to your heart. My heart, I've been involved in it, but I don't think as much as you, man, but I love every bit of it, which is kind of security investigations in this corporate side mixed in with the civilian / military / anything, you know, corporate security. And for the folks that don't know, Scott has a huge background on corporate security investigations, military investigations, federal investigations. Your last name should be investigations, or at least your middle name, man.
It's Walker, like the Texas Ranger.
Oh, that's wild. That might have been wild. That's funny. Like, did you ever ask your parents, though? Like, did you know that I was going to be doing this kind of stuff? Like, calling me one.
No, I'm just glad they didn't name me Johnny.
Well, it's a great drink, buddy. Great drink. You know, anything above 12 year, Johnny is a good way to go. Yes. You know, you seem to be a 40 plus year Johnny. So, you know, that you're even better.
Seasoned but not bitter.
Well, that's right, man. So listen, security investigations. Yeah. You know, it's a little bit different everywhere we look at. There's a lot of weird stuff going on with some corporate threats and risk, and then obviously military risk and everything else. And it's evolving. It's getting better. You know, you were just talking about military folks using dating apps and everything else, video game apps to communicate with each other. There's a lot of that stuff going on, man. So tell me about it.
Yeah, well, you know, this is a very timely subject, Carlos, because we're working on developing a little behind the scenes a little bit here, but we are developing an investigations magic course.
We are.
This is for basic investigators. So this is top of mind, this topic we're going to talk about, because we've been working on developing this in the background and probably releasing within the next month, basic investigations course. But just in the news today or yesterday was a military member was using a dating app to transfer classified documents. And believe it or not, this is not the young man from the East Coast who was using Discord to talk about classified information. This is a new one.
Right.
So this brings up the insider threat concern, because do our employees know who they're talking about? Do they know what they're doing when they're starting to release information to somebody? And the basics of this case, as far as I understand it, was that a civilian employee of the Air Force, who was also retired military, released classified information on a foreign dating app, so not like a U.S. Company type dating app, and was providing information in regards to the Russian-Ukraine conflict. And so what this brings up, and this is nothing new, but there is a twist here in that it was a dating app. And so, you know, I'm empathetic to people who are lonely, and it's hard to find a significant other, whatever that means. And people are relying heavily on technology to communicate with each other. That is something that we haven't seen in previous years. You know, so what we have is the question in my mind is, does the employee or does the person who's got access to classified information, or if it's a company, confidential company information, and they're on these dating apps, are they potentially subject to being manipulated by these folks emotionally? And I think we have to educate our workers, and then we have to be vigilant about what these kind of threats are. And the education piece comes down to, and we'll talk about investigations too, because that's difficult. But on the education piece, I think, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Carlos, that we should be having open conversations about the potential compromise that people may face with online dating. And this is something that was kind of tableau. Nobody talked about it in a workplace sense. And I actually think we do need to talk about it because it's very similar to business email compromise, which is somebody is manipulated in a some type of online communication, email, text, whatever. And they are told, hey, I'm the CEO. This is my email. Can you go do something, usually around finance, like go buy Green Dot cards and then scratch them off and give me the codes on the back, because that's what a CEO would do. But and no joke, this happens consistently all the time. And so this is an evolution of that in my mind to now, hey, I'm in this online relationship with somebody. Do you really know who they are?
Yeah.
Really know why they have connected with you, and you're talking to them, and maybe you're in some geographical location that the only thing you could be doing is government work, for example, or you're in Silicon Valley. So I know you're probably working for a tech company, you know?
Yep.
Anyways, so my thought is educate your employees. Let them know that this is a risk. What do you think?
I agree. I'm going to call it intelligence catfishing. So intelligence catfishing, we're going to throw it out there. Maybe that's I'm sure the term might have been out there or somebody thought of it, but it just came to it. A couple of things. So I'm going to go back on, you know, when I was younger, I was an intel officer at every bar in Orlando, Florida. Yep. Just so you know, that was my thing. I was either that or an F-16 pilot. Okay. That's how I rolled. That's, you know, because everybody wants to do, especially the guys that actually deal with it, but don't really know how to contain it. They love to tell a chick, you know, a lady or a girl, whatever you want to call them, that, hey, yeah, you know, I do this, and oh, let me tell you what I know, right, kind of thing, and that makes them sexy. Well, that's definitely a mistake. And easily now the apps can come in into play as you're seeing it more and more and more, you know, every single day. So I think that's interesting. The education piece is awesome too, because look, I'm as you're saying it, I'm like, okay, what is an NDA worth today?
Yeah.
You know, what is it worth? And if I'm working on a corporate side, you know, and maybe I'll talk a little bit more about this side of the house. It's like, what's the importance of an NDA, and does it really work? And does anybody really care? I mean, other than you possibly getting fired or something in the US, like what else? What else is going to happen to you? Go, you know, go get a job somewhere else. And now in California, an NDA is worthless.
Yeah.
California, 100%, you leave, they can't tell you can't go work for another company anymore. That law passed. And I, by the way, I could talk crap about my company as soon as I leave. The day I leave, I can go online and they can't do anything to me. The tech industry, especially the tech industry, one that I think when it comes on the ownership of data and all of this technology stuff should definitely be on top of, hey, don't talk about it. Well, we just lost that in the state of California. So anybody can leave and go work. That's just how it works, right? So I'm thinking all these things. And as you're saying, and you're right, there's a lot of lonely people in the tech industry. And it's just the nature of it, because you're literally, in order to be awesome, you must be a tremendous engineer. A lot of engineering folks are focused on the computer. They're a set type of people. I worked with many of them, I know, and they're very focused on the work that they do. They're not really focused on the love life and everything else until it hits them. And they go, oh, crap. And I, you know, I feel, almost feel like we're a love show now. Anyways, but you're right, man. There's a lot of interesting stuff that's being used today. How do we fight this kind of stuff? How do we continue to think about it corporately? You know, how do we do it in the military side? How do we do it? Intelligence side, how we do it, man? It's a tough one.
Yeah, this is a constant battle that we're going to have to fight. And I think there are some things that can be done too on the online side of this, in that, of course, every company should restrict with their IT team the access to any of these apps. I can't imagine that most people are using their corporate devices, whether it be a cell phone, laptop, whatever, to go to these apps. But the ability to transfer for documents has got to be restricted. And you should not be able to cut and paste out of your Microsoft Outlook on your corporate device to any other app. And if it's done or if it's attempted, IT should get a notification. So on the investigation side and how to combat this, of course, education first, right? We always give our employees that opportunity. Right. We agree with your assessment of NDAs. We still have them, still should have them. And it should be written into not only the NDA, but the code of conduct. And those are all, you know, enforceable up to and including termination. So that's a good way to kind of leverage protecting that IP. But additionally, we've got to be kind of tracking these things and at least sniffing for them in the backgrounds.
Yeah. So, you know, interesting that you said that. So here, all right, let's throw out a little bit of lesson, right? Corporate Security University. So it's a great thing for your investigator and you're dealing with this kind of stuff, Scotty. It's like, how are you going to do it? Are you going to do like a MAC, which is the mandatory access control? Are you going to do it by role-based access control? Because that's a big one, right? How are you going to maintain those state discretionary access control? That's another one that we need to think about. And rule-based, which is kind of even on access control of buildings, it's the same thing. We look at kind of like the role-based against the rule-based controls. Those are the easy ones if you use any access control on your property. So are you doing these kinds of things on the company phones, on, you know, your just access to anything on the computer and everything else? By the way, does everybody now have a company laptop? Is that because I remember we used to go to the office and had those big hunky computers, but never computer laptop.
This is the challenge with work remote, right? We want everybody who works remote enjoys working remote that I know of. Some people don't, but you know, that was the big play from COVID was, oh, well, everybody can be remote all the time if they want to. What that really meant was now I can make you work whenever I want to or whenever I need to. If there's a crisis going on, I need you to work because, oh, now you have no excuse. Oh, I'm away from the office. I can't go in. You know, you have your laptop, you have your cell phone, you know, that usually has company apps on it. So this is the danger of that, in that now you have a much more distinct internal threat to who's got access to information when and where. And now people are going all around the world with those access points. And this is why I say, to your point about, you know, rules-based access and things like that, if you're in a geographic location that is not favorable to the company, your access should be locked out. You know, so to your point of the IT folks or the cybersecurity folks need to be ensuring that, you know, for one, people aren't allowed to go to specific websites that deal with communications that the company doesn't support. And I have an example of this because when I was at a previous tech company years ago and Slack was new, that's how old this is. We found that the engineers were using Slack rather than, I think we were on Teams. So they weren't using Teams. They were using Slack because they felt it was a better product. I don't know that they're wrong or right, but it was not a company sanctioned product. And, the company ended up buying a license because the employees that were using it were so adamant, I'm not using anything else, this is the best thing ever. And so fortunately the company could do that. But, you know, having these controls, you can't allow them to be manipulated, because once you start letting people manipulate a little bit here and a little bit there, right. It's that old adage, you take an inch, you take a mile. And that's just, this starts to snowball. Then you have situations like what we've seen with now two Air Force employees who are bringing, you know, more than likely they're bringing cell phones into classified areas, and they're using those devices to access information and then disseminate them on applications that have no security, or at least very little security. They're certainly open to manipulation. We don't know who's on the other end of receiving these items. So investigatively, it becomes a real nightmare. Law enforcement is a constant battle with how do we investigate and prosecute bad actors that are using company or applications from companies that are outside of the jurisdiction of the United States. I was just on a call yesterday listening to a U.S. attorney, and God bless them, they got a tough job, but they're using old terms to describe things because the laws were written decades ago before there was an internet in many cases, and they're using old language and the current language doesn't really fit. And their biggest challenge, this U.S. attorney said this, was jurisdiction. Do they have the jurisdiction? Can they serve a subpoena, search warrant, et cetera, on to recover these files or to secure the data so it's not deleted? It depends. You know, if you're a company that's not headquartered in the United States and it's outside of the reach of the U.S. government, you're it's an additional risk. And that's what we saw with this case with the dating app. It was a dating app from a company that was outside the United States. I believe it was in Ukraine. And, you know, look, the Ukrainians should want to work with us even more than they ever have, especially now. But the challenge remains, how do you investigate these things? Well, first, you got to find the evidence. What's the evidence? What we call best evidence is the actual data that was disseminated on the platform. And more than likely, you're not going to get it. And it's even harder for corporate investigators, because unless you used a device that we have access to, it's gone. It's going to be very difficult for us to recover.
Yeah, exactly what I was going to say as you were heading into it, man. Like, if you don't have some kind of like IP management software of any kind, you know, that's looking at how many files are being downloaded in you know, fast tracked through an email or uploaded somewhere else or whatever the case may be, then you're failing. So here's something: if you're running security at a company, you might want to think about, you know, an IP kind of management software. And there's a bunch of them in mind. I'm not going to name them because they're not great sponsors of Corporate Security University, but you're right, Scotty, you gotta take a look at that. Let me ask you a question real quick on the education piece. Who fails at educating each other more? And I'm going to go back to benchmarking. Like, I'm very comfortable benchmarking with anybody, but would the military be okay benchmarking with us on the corporate side or the federal side or whatever the case may be, and vice versa? And are companies, do you believe today, are open to benchmarking with each other what they're doing in order to protect their IP? Other corporate companies?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'll talk about military and corporations first, because I think that's the biggest challenge. I try to listen to what our government says in regards to you should do this, you should do that. Most of us don't work for government contractors, so it's tough to benchmark outside of that. Certainly, the government and government contractors are putting a lot of money into how they protect their systems and networks, because they have a standard they have to meet, whether it be NISPOM or others, and I'm no expert in that, but my belief is that the government is doing a lot of outreach to share, like, hey, this is best practice, this is what you should be doing. In fact, the call I was on, an FBI agent from the Computer Crimes Division came on and talked about an exploitation in printers. And you're probably a member of InfoGuard. I encourage all of our listeners to join InfoGuard if you can.
Yeah, that's CISA. I mean, you just go out there. Yeah,
DSAC, get OSAC, those are all great. And they do share a lot.
ISMA.
ISMA. Well, if you can join
ISMA. If you can roll in there.
But, you know, educate yourself on what the latest vulnerabilities are. And so I do believe that at least the U.S. government does try to disseminate that as much as possible, because I do believe that they have a vested interest in sharing kind of their best practices. Benchmarking is another, you know, whole nother ballgame. So I'll talk about benchmarking between companies. I wish we'd do more of it. So many companies are so worried about the competition, and they limit, if they do share anything at all, and you and I have have recently been benchmarking with each other. And so on other situations. So I would love to see it happen more often, but my sense is that because of their concerns about sharing their weaknesses and vulnerabilities, that they just don't say anything, right, rather than just give me, you know, like water it down even. So I have some information or some idea of how, because what do our, obviously our leaders in most organizations are fiscally minded, know, like, hey, I would love to support this idea. I love, you know, we got to protect our IP, but to what end? How much is it going to cost us and over what kind of time period? And this is, we talk about this a lot, corporate diversity, which is we have to have our financial hats on at all times. And we be thinking about, yeah, sure, I want a million cameras on campus and guards at every door, but what's the threat? What's the risk? What does that cost? What's the cost benefit analysis over time? Right. You know? And so I think we need to also have those answers, because 99% of the time when we say, hey, there's a new vulnerability, I have benchmarked with similar companies in our industry, and this is what they're doing, and this is the money that they're spending. That's much easier sell than if you just go, hey, there's a threat. We need right, to protect ourselves. Like, yeah, okay, like, how do we do it? How much does it cost? How long do we do it for? You know, are we talking about culture change? What's going on? There's a lot more to it than just saying security for security's sake.
Yeah. Here's another thing too. We got a lot of breaches going on, and it's going to keep on happening. They're going to grow. They're going to get bigger. And, you know, and you'll see a lot of chief security officers, CISOs, that if you don't mention it, you don't go out there and you tell the public these things happening, now you're going to jail. It's like a federal thing. And if you're not benchmarking with other companies that, hey, dude, I know a breach just happened in your company, you have a little time for me, man, let's talk. You have to be open to those conversations so you can educate yourself as well. And if you're in that field and you can, you know, reach out to somebody that just, you know, got hacked or something, you got to find out where it came from. How did the hacking happen or whatever the case may be? Yeah. You're gonna figure out, you know, a lot faster if you're open. You know, a long time ago in a land far, far and away, you know, one of the big things that I learned was that security and safety is not a leading edge or a winning edge, not in our industry, because I'm not selling that. So in order for us to be safe, we must share. So we should be doing those kinds of things. And, you know, now more than ever with these breaches, you got to be able to reach out to other companies and go, hey, how did it happen? Let's talk about it. Was it an insider thing? It was, you know, somebody, you know, you're talking about Ukraine. You got people in Iran right now, Iran, sorry. Sometimes I speak Portuguese, but anyways, a lot of those things are going on. But you're right, man. I just wanted to touch up. I mean, how's that thought? Was you good on that thought? Because I wanted to go into something else.
Go ahead.
So Alan Sequela, our good friend, and we'll throw him in there. And Larry Nicholson wrote a really cool investigations professional guide, which, you know, it's really great. And one of the things that one of the chapters that he talked about is, which is interesting, because I started this way in my book as well. I wanted to set up a process from the beginning prior to even you getting into it. How do you do it? Prior to you getting into like an investigations problem at your company, they said, you know, spend a lot of time on just doing background checks of everybody that you come in, that's coming into your company. And if you actually do a lot of pre-employment investigations before the investigations ever were to happen, you know, you could save your company a lot of money. And I know that some companies are light on that, man. They're light on it. And I don't know. I just, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
It's a nerdy topic for me. I could go way down there. We could do another hour on this. Because I was just talking about this with somebody, and we were talking specifically about government.
Because you do that. You actually do a lot of pre-employment checks.
That's right. And it's, you know, there's a lot of legalities around them. And I've had people come to, you know, my wife and I have a private investigations firm, and this is what we do, is we call it due diligence. I don't like the term background investigation, because there are some legalities around it that some people don't want to deal with, which is, you know, the there's a Fair Credit Reporting Act and things like that. And there's a lot of misunderstanding in the industry from human resources professionals that don't understand what you can get and what you can't get and how far back you got to go. And so we call it corporate, or we call it due diligence rather than background investigation. But there are releases that have to be signed by the candidates, and the candidate has to know what's going on. But I was talking with a friend yesterday about this, because government clearances, depending on the level, there's, you know, several, depending on which level you have, you may be reinvestigated every 5 years. So that means a full start to finish background investigation that could affect your employment, you know, depending on how honest you are and what's happened. And I think that's we'd go back to best practices. That's a best practice. We have found that he was sharing, he worked for a government contractor. He was sharing a situation where one of his employees had the lowest level background done years prior, and was they because he had done fine on that background, they had upped him to the next level clearance or wanted to. Hit the organization that was doing the background found something that was a problem, reached out to him because he's the facility security officer, and said, hey, did you know about this previous issue? And, oh, by the way, your guy's in jail right now. Did you know that? And, you know, of course he hadn't, because the level of clearance that they had initially done didn't uncover it.
Right.
And so when we talk about pre-employment investigations, I think in the same token, we should say, there's nothing wrong with with your employee's knowledge, because I think that's fair. You do a reinvestigation, or you tell them like every X amount of time, we're going to, run a criminal records check on you. You know,
right.
Most people believe that we do a lot of credit checks, and unless you're in a CFO or something, you're dealing with heavy finances.
Right.
Most companies don't care about, you know, that you had a bankruptcy 10 years ago. So and most people don't want to know what your credit score is. It's none of their business, right?
Right, right.
As far as your employer is concerned, there's a few, you know, reasons to do that outside of normal employment, though. We don't pull your credit. We're not going to ding it. You know, we're not going to hit it, because that doesn't have any value to us. The value is in if you have liens and judgments against you. I don't care if your credit score is 500, but if you've got liens, judgments, and you have expressed a pattern of kind of inappropriate actions with money, that's something, and you're going to be in the treasury in a business, you know, you're going to be working with finances. That's something a company might want to know.
Right.
And then of course, criminal and civil, everybody wants to know that. Previous employment, previous addresses, everybody wants to know those things. But again, there's a lot of regulations around that. Every state practically has its own regulations. As you can imagine, New York and California are very restrictive, like you were saying earlier, with privacy. And by the way, we're going into a world that demands more privacy.
Yeah,
so
I agree. You
know, as employers, we're not going to be able to get the information. California is a perfect example. It's very difficult to get criminal information. I do not care what any private investigator or background investigations company tells you. They are lying to you if they say that they can get criminal history from the other end of the world,
right,
in California. The only way to get criminal history information in California is to go into the court, like physically walk into the court, and here is what I need. Please look. That's because California's changed their laws.
Yeah, it's so basically what you're saying is that I think even the corporate side should be different levels of kind of background, depending, I think, where your position is in. And, you know, it's even and again, to go back to Alan, our good friend Alan's book, yeah. He talks about, which I know the due diligence part of this comes in, which is like social affiliations kind of thing. Especially in a C-suite, right? You want to make sure that you want to hire the right person. I mean, by the way, I feel that one of the biggest threats for the company are anybody in the C-suite of a big company, because they messed up, they do the wrong things, they're involved in the wrong things. Something comes out stocks are dropping.
Yes.
That's just how it goes. And money is everything. So people are looking at like medical records and everything else. And there's a lot of stuff going on. But yeah, man.
And there's science behind what you just said. You know, most of our corporators, when there is a fraud detected or when there's loss, they want us to go look at the janitor and the security guards because they think automatically that's who did it. I can tell you that I've had all aspects. I've had the top tippy top of the company to the lowest person there. They've committed theft, fraud, embezzlement, all, you know, bribery, all those things. Historically, or at least statistically, the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners does a fraud survey every year.
Right. And
every year, the top leadership in the company have the most impactful frauds that are committed. They're the largest amount. They're the most frequent. That's the unfortunate truth. And so to your point about, I like the different levels of investigation. I think
yeah.
Really need to think about this going forward. How are you going to do it? What does that look like? You talk about social connections, you know, because all these companies love to hire people away from their competition.
Oh yeah.
Are you hiring them because of what they know about their previous employer? We've already seen this with Cruise and the Google car self-driving
one. Waymo.
Thank you, Waymo, where they were stealing their IP potentially. I don't remember what the outcome of the case was. And anyways, we're going into a world where we have less employees and they have more incentive to do nefarious things.
I agree. To bring back the dating apps, you know, that's an easy way to share all that information, Scott. And you know, it's funny about this topic, man. We can go on forever and ever and ever. Like, I know I want to ask you, and we'll have to do with this on another one because we're, you know, trying to keep it on 30 minutes. But like, again, going back to my concept of like, what's the beginning like for people? And I wonder, you know, for you, and we get this on the next one, like, where did it start? Like, this love for investigation and stuff like that. And, but we got to hit that up later because,
yeah,
I'm sure there's a lot in there. But, yeah. Anything else before we close this one out?
Be diligent, be mindful, keep learning. We'll talk more about how technology is being used to manipulate people. We see it more and more and more often. Deep fakes, synthetic IDs, synthetic information created out of whole cloth. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You no longer need to have the person to say the bad thing. I can take their voice, I can take their video, I can take their picture, and I can make it happen. It's already happened in this election process with phone calls on behalf of the Bidens. So, you know, this is just the tip of the iceberg. There is so much more. It only gets worse from here.
Yeah, can't wait today. Get to that kind of investigations and trying to investigate quantum computing and everything else behind them. And the future is here. The future is now. So right. Here we go. Well, listen, everybody, thanks for listening again. We'll come back with like a 2, 3, 4 rounder of investigations. There's so much we could do. There's so much that we're putting into the class, this course that we're putting together, and Scott is killing it. So really excited about that. But hey, thanks again for listening to us. I am Carlos Francisco.
And I'm Scott Walker.
This is Corporate Security University.
Security excellence through education.
All right. Take care, everybody. We'll catch you next time. Bye-bye. Security Excellence Through Education, Corporate Security University.